A master plan for downtown Moline and it's fair time in the cities. In a moment, the plans that were unveiled for the heart of Moline. But first, the future of your local public television station. As you may know, Congress has approved a rescissions package that takes back more than $1 billion Congress already allocated for the next 2 years to the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, which then distributes that money to PBS, NPR, and public broadcasting stations like WQPT. It's a big blow to local broadcasters. So how big of an impact is it? Here's WQPT General Manager Dawn Schmidt.
I'd like to start with six words that have become the rallying cry throughout the public media community. We're down, but we're not out. There's no doubt having 2 years of pre-approved federal funding rescinded just over 60 days before we would have received it is an incredibly serious setback for WQPT. As our loyal viewers, this is understandably a time of great concern and uncertainty for you, just as it is for us. Please know that we are determined that this will not be a moment of defeat. WQPT's educational mission to serve the information and cultural needs of our region is more critical now than ever before. Moving forward will require hard work and difficult decisions, but it is our responsibility to ensure that the public service is sustained and strengthened for our viewers, for underserved children, and for local classrooms, now and for future generations. This is a tough moment. With your continued support and the support of our philanthropic community, we are committed to doing whatever it takes to protect this local station. Our small staff of 7 people is one of the smartest, most dedicated groups of people I have ever worked with. My confidence in their ability to innovate, adapt, and transform is unwavering.
WQPT General Manager Dawn Schmidt. Moline has a unique opportunity. The new Interstate 74 bridge has left a new imprint on the city's downtown. It's also freed up some 12 acres of real estate left behind by the removal of the old I-74 route. After years of planning, a new Riverfront Moline Center plan has been released to the public. And as expected, it calls for a park and community space facing the Mississippi River and Sylvan Slough as part of the downtown centerpiece. But what else is in the plan? We're joined by the president and CEO of Renew Moline, Alexandra Ellis, who is partnering with the city and other stakeholders in the development of this plan. So the detailed plans of what the downtown area could look like came out. As expected, it really centers on a park system that faces the slough and the river.
Yes. The MKSK plan, which is the Riverfront Master Plan. We've also called it the Riverfront and Center Plan. So it's a portion of downtown, not all of downtown, but it really does focus on, you know, that crown jewel, which is the riverfront area.
There were no real surprises in it, was there?
I wouldn't describe it as surprises, but I think confirmation that access to the river is important for the community. The community wants to experience and touch the river, maybe not literally, but they want to get close enough to it that they feel like they're, you know, next to it. And, you know, we have a downtown bike path that's very active that's in that area. And so people are accustomed to accessing it, but that particular location right near the I-74 bridge on the west side is just, you know, it's been industrial for a long time. And so creating beautiful public space out of that has really been a welcome message from the community.
Well, when you say quite some time since the founding of Moline.
That is true.
It's been an industrial site all along, and that's what actually brought John Deere and the mills all, you know. Moline history is based on downtown being more industrial than a beautiful park system. And in a way, getting rid of the old I-74 bridge just opened up the opportunity to make this more of a gathering place, the downtown area.
It did. 14 acres of redevelopable property. And that's the area between the city's water department, which is there now, and the new bridge, and then the river and River Drive. So a very large, contiguous 14-acre area that is really the city's front porch, and now the city has control over that property to make decisions with the community on what that looks like.
One of the areas like you brought up where the water department's located, mm-hmm. And I noticed in the drawing was that it was a bit of a splash pad in front of it. Am I wrong?
I'm not sure I saw a splash pad.
Yeah, I can't remember what it was, or a fountain of some sort.
Yeah, so there's a centerpiece. You know, as urban designers and city planners, we think a lot about view corridors. We think about views to the river. We think about when you're on 19th Street and you're looking toward the river, what do you see? And, you know, trying to create a view corridor with something interesting at the end is always a focus for urban designers.
Because one of the areas that the Urban Institute was talking about when they did their study that was released about 4 years ago, mm-hmm. is that they were calling for just something that was bold. And they had a huge fountain shooting up that you could see
in the river. Ice.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. They were looking for something bold. Do you see anything bold in this plan? Because I have to tell you the truth, I didn't see anything all that bold.
Well, I think the city's planning for public space along the riverfront in response really to what the community wanted is bold in the sense that it's, you know, a strong decision in the right direction. I also think that there are themes that the Urban Land Institute provided in that work 4 years ago, including activating the river itself. You see in some of the images from MKSK now, there are images of kayaks and activities that are actually river-based. That was a theme that came out of the Urban Land Institute work. Also, just activating that area for the public was really a theme that was very strongly emphasized in the Urban Land Institute work and has continued through this MKSK plan.
The drawing also showed kind of a new hotel, if I'm right. I mean, I was looking at the building, and it looked like that was new construction.
So everything north of River Drive would be new construction with the exception, we have one building there that could remain, which is the Spiegel Building, which has been the subject of a discussion for a public market. Mm-hmm. And there are a number of options being evaluated for that. But, you know, the hotel, the residential development that's sited there, you know, is really an invitation to the private development community to come forward with ideas.
Okay.
The city is open to discussing, you know, any and all development proposals. I think in a lot of ways, the master plan is sort of a marketing piece to tell people here are the beautiful public improvements that the city intends to construct in that public-private partnership type format. And so for developers that are looking for, you know, a place to site residential development or a hotel or retail, commercial, you know, all of those things are really on the table. I think the concept plan that you see is really just an idea of what could potentially happen, but the city relies on private investment then to come forward and say, here's what we would like to do.
That's what I was going to get at, is that it really is an invitation, as you said, for private developers, because it's not just municipal money that's being used here.
That's right. And I think that's what people need to remember is that, you know, when the city puts forward a plan, it is in fact a plan. And as you know, if you've remodeled your house, plans sometimes change based on, you know, what you can afford, what, you know, is current at that time in terms of need. You know, we know that we have a need for residential development downtown, and so we are hopeful that those residential sites, you know, will move forward. As I mentioned also, the public market is sort of an anchor for that area, is being looked at both for, you know, more of a historic building renovation in the Spiegel Building, but also the city is being very wise about this in looking at all options, including a new build of a public market. So obviously, a historic building is pretty cool, but it has some constraints that a new build might not have. And so I think really in looking for an anchor project and something that could start early is, you know, the public market could be one of those things.
The Urban Land Institute study, which I keep going back to, is they mentioned two of the big things in regards to downtown Moline was empty storefronts and too much asphalt. Do you think that this latest plan helps solve some of those problems?
Well, I think it prevents, I shouldn't say prevent it, but it certainly offers an alternative to redeveloping that area in a way that concentrates parking and structures and really allows sort of a centralized parking approach to development around it, and then having access to that public parking for people that are going to an event, say at the outdoor amphitheater that is shown in the plans and other things. So really centralizing that parking to make sure that we don't have, you know, here's an asphalt lot, there's an asphalt lot. It's more of a centralized approach in the riverfront area.
And it's also a way to like make sure that the historic parts of downtown remain, but also add these amenities to bring more people into the downtown area, because there is no real gathering spot downtown.
I think
there is Bass Street Landing, yes.
Bass Street Landing, I think, you know, we have different activity centers. We have the Vibrant Arena at the Mark. We have Bass Street Landing. We have the retail corridor. There's Fifth Avenue. And so if you're, you know, if you're in downtown at lunchtime, you see a busy Fifth Avenue with people walking back and forth. And I think what we want to do is extend that activity. One of the observations that the Urban Land Institute had was that you have activity on pedestrian activity, retail activity on Fifth Avenue, and you have it on River Drive, but we're missing those north-south connections. Mm-hmm. And so I think really a large part of our residential focus going after projects has been to fill in some of those gaps and create that pedestrian activity that connects those things.
It is a project that, as we said, private investment, but also Renew Moline in the city of Moline. What is the timeline, perhaps, to get something that an amphitheater or a park or something tangible that people will start to notice?
That's a hard question, Jim. I think, you know, those are capital public improvements. They're expensive, they're long-term investments. You know, I know that the city is working on their capital improvements program now. They do that with a three-year planning focus. And so I think that's really something that the city will be paying attention to.
One other area that was mentioned in this study is that there's a need for more study, and you brought up part of it. Supplemental studies, including the River Drive traffic study, the tower investigation, as it's called, which would be what I still refer to as the Kone Tower, and then, as you said, the Spiegel Building and the possibility of a food hall. When I talked to you last, that was something that you were so excited about, is the possibility of making the Spiegel Building into this culinary institute where people would learn. You'd have a rooftop restaurant, real possibilities. Is that still somewhat a concept that is gaining any momentum?
It is. I don't remember the last time you and I talked about this, Jim, but I think it's been a couple of years.
Yeah.
And so we were very fortunate to receive money from the Deer Foundation to do further study on what I called then the food-based ecosystem. And so looking at some of our local vendors and our local institutions that take care of those vendors, so Mercado on Fifth, Freight House Farmers Market, you know, who have waiting lists for folks that want to be vendors in those spaces and either can't because they're outdoors and they're not year-round. So the idea that has really gelled is that idea of a public market, which is indoor, low-cost vendor space for someone like you who's making empanadas in your kitchen and you would like to sell them, and perhaps you're selling out on a Friday night at Mercado. We also know that those vendors have need for, say, canning, bottling, and packaging that they don't have in the community right now. Someone told me recently that a lot of our local vendors are buying tortillas from Chicago, and you know, why is that happening? So just looking for ways to accommodate that need by the vendors that are and the food entrepreneurs that are here already into a formal public market type format, I think has taken shape and really gelled. So, you know, it's evolved away from, not necessarily away from, but, you know, will it have a restaurant on the roof? Who knows? You know, will it have a culinary institute? We hope so. I think the success of that public market, and Administrator Vitas and I just got back from the International Public Markets Conference a few weeks ago in Milwaukee and experienced a bunch of different types of markets. And what I say about public markets is that if you've seen one market, you've seen one market, because each of them is really designed to be conducive to what that community needs, what the vendors and food entrepreneurs in that community need. And then it's really layered programming. I mean, it's everything from, you know, having a wedding and special events to you know, training for food vendors in how to take photographs and market their product and all kinds of things. So it's really, I think I came away from that conference, and in the last year and probably since we spoke, I've learned a lot more about really the ecosystem that those public markets are. And I would say that we're excited about that. You know, the reception that idea has gotten has been positive overall. I think, you know, it's a complex project that takes a lot of effort and you know, funding to put together something like that, but it's been done in other communities. We don't have it here,
and it can augment rather than compete against something like that.
That's exactly right. That was the premise that we started out with from the beginning, is that we wanted to offer things that people needed, Freight House Farmers Market, Mercado on Fifth, and others that they didn't already have access to. And so if we could offer something like that, then we're not duplicating, we're not competing, and we're supplementing the success that's already here.
So this downtown plan that's been released, What is it going to take to make sure that it's not a binder that's sitting somewhere gathering dust? I mean, how do you put this into action?
I would say carve off bite-sized pieces, if you will. You know, the city will be marketing those individual development spaces. The city has an economic development manager that's been on staff now for about 18 months, and he has a lot of great experience from other cities. So he will be a key component of, you know, marketing those spaces to developers that can really turn the key on, you know, starting the engine on some of that stuff. So that'll be a big focus for all of us.
Optimistic?
Absolutely. Yeah, I think that, you know, the real game changer was when the city acquired all of the property north of River Drive. I mean, that was really a game changer because they really, now the conversation is just with the community, just with the, you know, with the community who lives here, works here, plays here, but also with the development community about what's it going to take to put in 250 residential units in that area? What's it going to take to put in an amphitheater? So they have the building blocks in place, and that's a big thing that not a lot of people see, but is just foundational to the work that we do.
Our thanks to the president and CEO of Renew Moline, Alexandra Ellis. Still to come, getting ready for the Great Mississippi Valley Fair. But first, a look at other area events, thanks to Visit Quad Cities.
Check out the things to do this week in the Quad Cities. Explore the river while taking a ride on the Channel Cat Water Taxi. Then get ready to read and join the July Book Club at the Atlas Collective on July 22nd. Next, get out to Modern Woodman Park to see the Quad Cities River Bandits in action. Then grab your tennis shoes because the Quad City Times Big 7 is here. Finally, it's Fan Appreciation Night at the Quad City Steamrollers game on July 26th. For more events like these, check out our events calendar at visitquadcities.com.
It's almost fair time, and that means finishing touches are now underway for the Mississippi Valley Fair in Davenport. The fair is known for its grandstand concerts, its fair foods, various attractions, and judged competition of everything from artwork to foods, apparel to livestock. And joining us is the general manager of the fair, Sean Loader.
The fair is going to be opening in just a few days. I mean, are you ready? I mean, getting the fairgrounds ready, you've done it a couple times.
Oh, yeah.
But
no,
it's always a different year.
It is, yeah. And we do a lot of different things. We try to change a lot of things around. So it's always definitely a moving thing all the time. So.
Tell me a little bit about the grandstand lineup, because you had somebody cancel out and you had to replace that person.
Yeah, so unfortunately, Nate Smith had to cancel this year. So not just one, we got two entertainers that are going to replace him. So.
Can you tell me who yet?
Yeah, it's going to be Maddie and Tay and Locash.
So in a way, you get two for one now.
Yeah, you get two for one now. So it's not as bad.
How tough is it to get a lineup that is for different audiences? Because, I mean, you kind of have a rock night, and I know, you know, the Sunday night is usually the big concert finale, and then you have your country acts and all that. What are you trying to get accomplished on the grandstand?
So I like to keep it, you know, fair, like keep the different genres out there. So, you know, everybody thinks it's a country fair and stuff, but you know, you have a lot of rock people, you have a lot of pop people around, so I like to keep it equal out there and try to get something for everyone out there.
And our performers, do they enjoy the grandstand experience with the lights and the flies and the moths?
You know what?
Because you have to have a group that enjoys performing outdoors.
And they do. So that's, you know, when especially our crowd, I go to a lot of concerts out there, and our crowd is second to none. I mean, they're loud, they're into it. So these entertainers feed off that.
Sure.
And so after my agent gets a feedback from them, and they all come back with positive feed that they love it there, they want to come back and do it again the next year. But
there's hardly a bad seat in the house.
I think every seat is good. You know, and this year we're doing a VIP experience with the WLR and Pepsi card holders. They will be right up front of the grandstand. That's a $150 ticket. If you've bought a regular fund card that they're $115 now, you can upgrade anytime through the week if you want to actually get up, and you'll have your own bar, bathrooms, and everything up front.
You celebrated your 100th anniversary of the Mississippi Valley Fair a couple of years ago. It's 105 now.
19,
You really were doing a lot of renovations to get ready for that century mark. Is there anything that you have to do at the fairgrounds that has to be upgraded? Because did a lot of work already.
Yeah, we did. Like the year I took over in 17, you know, we remodeled the main arches up front. You know, there's Clay County Fair has one similar but a lot smaller. So that's only one in existence, you know, and that was over 100 years. So we wanted to make sure it lasts another 100 years. So we put a lot of money into that, a lot of concrete. This year, we finished the grandstand. So a couple years ago, we rebricked the outside of the grandstand. Now, new roof, all the flooring inside is all brand new. So
it's a big deal because it's a concert experience, and you don't want the place to look shabby.
No, and you want it to stay standing. So yeah, definitely.
Let's talk about, because I'm going to get back to the concerts, of course, the grandstand, but there's other events that are going on. You got to remember it's still a county fair in so many different ways. You have the 4-H, you've got the judging of either artwork or the best pie or all of the livestock. It really is a working fair in that way.
It is, and we definitely want to keep it that way. We want to really, help our youth out, 4-H. So our livestock shows are huge. I mean, we have one of the biggest Belgian shows around, and they all compete, and then they go to Iowa State Fair right after. So, yeah, you definitely, I mean, anything you want, quilts, pies, I mean, vegetables, models, I mean, anything you can think of, you know, we show it there at the fair.
It is kind of fun because you go through some of these exhibits, you go, there's some real creativity out there.
There is, yeah. And then you got all the 4-H projects, you know, the kids bringing in the 4-H building, you know, you definitely want to support those kids and FFA.
The other big thing, of course, is everybody wants the fair food. And there's certain stands everyone goes to. There's the go-to. Is there anything new as far as the food is concerned?
We got some. I'm still getting the list there because we have a couple new. We actually have a couple new food vendors coming in. So definitely you want to check those out. But we're gathering all the new foods now, so they're coming up with them now. But yeah, should be good.
There was once I remember there was one place that you could bring your own food and they would deep fry it. So it was like deep fry anything.
So we have it's a stand called Fried What?
Yeah, okay.
So anything you want, they'll fry it up for you.
I kind of like that. That's good for the heart. So let's talk a little bit about what you do have going on. I thought it was interesting. So you start off, what, Tuesday?
Tuesday, July 29th.
Kane Brown
kicks it off.
What made you pick that?
He's a big entertainer. You know, we always want to go with somebody big. Tried for the first day. But we haven't had them yet, so I'm trying to get people that we haven't had before.
And then Wednesday once again?
Wednesday's going to be Matt Ainte and then Low Cash.
We got 303.
303, old 90s.
And TLC, thing. Third Eye Blind, Pop, Evil, and Lit.
Yep.
See, I'm hip. I know these things. And that's your Thursday, Friday, and Saturday lineup.
Yep, and then John Party's going to end the fair.
So tell me about John Party.
He's awesome. I mean, he's got a lot of great songs, and, you know, he's high energy, and, so we're excited to have him.
Is that the way that, I mean, like I said, is Sunday your big finale? That's the big deal.
We try to open up big, and then we try to end big if we can.
Let me ask you a little bit about the other entertainment stages, because you have six other entertainment stages. A lot of them's got local talent, but there's some really great groups. There's a lot of fun to have you had.
Yeah, I mean, you walk out, we got entertainment in the variety tent. We have the craft beer tent that's right outside the grandstand. That's new within the last few years. Yep. The pavilion's got entertainment all day long. And then, of course, after the main acts, you go back to the farmer's tent out back, and that's where we have some electric shock. We have cheese pizza that's new this year on Friday night. So Tyler Rickton Band, they're a huge local country band. Of course, Casey Music Man was on The Voice. They're all going to be back there.
Yeah, cheese pizza's been around for a while.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And they're great. If you haven't seen them, you definitely want to check them out.
Well, because that's one of the things is that it's kind of fun because you do have some party bands.
Yeah. Yeah. So definitely, if you don't like the main entertainment, please come support local.
Tell me about the fun card this year.
So fun card, of course, the WLR Pepsi 101 card that's 150 this year. That gets you in a half hour before the general public. And it'll get you either down in that pit area or you can find a good seat in the grandstand prior. Otherwise, your regular fun cards are $115 now. You can order them online through eTix The good thing about ordering them online, if you lose them, we can actually go in there and we can cancel that one and issue a new one with no questions.
So, that's a great idea.
Yeah. Or you can get them at Quickstars, Great Southern Banks, a lot of different businesses around. Hy-Vee's selling them this year as well. So.
And the weather's going to be great all week long.
Weather's going to be gorgeous all
Always
week.
Always is.
All week, yeah. and brand new this year, I do want to talk about it. So Iowa State Fair is always known for their butter cow.
So this year,
same lady, Sarah, she actually did ours a couple weeks ago, but we're doing a big, huge Belgian horse. So that's going to be our signature butter. And then also a beekeeper, some beehives and stuff. Because we're also in the expo building where the butter sculpture is. We're going to have a bee demonstrations. And you can go in, try all of our local honey, and see how they do the beehives and stuff like that.
So do you think the butter cow is now going to be, or the butter...
Belgian horse.
Is that going to be a mainstay? You're going to try to do that each year?
We're going to do that. That's going to kind of be our signature, and then we'll do some new stuff each year.
That's pretty cool. Well.
So, yeah, great new addition. And, so we have the dairy show Monday and Tuesday, and then after that, we clean up the Iowa building. We turn that into our educational center. But we'll have, like, a petting zoo. We'll have robotics, grain, all kinds of stuff that kids can go in there. We're going to have the sloths this year, bat encounter.
Really?
So a lot of cool new stuff in that building.
So check it all out. You've got it all listed on the website.
Yep. Just go to mvfair.com and everything's listed there. All the scheduling and everything's there.
Perfect. Yeah. Thanks, sir.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you.
Our thanks to the general manager of the Mississippi Valley Fair, Sean Loader. We're celebrating the upcoming 250th birthday of America by highlighting the people who helped make our region a better place to live. Everyone has a role in the fabric of our nation. In a way, it's their civic spark. So we've asked people like Western Illinois Congressman Eric Sorensen about their civic spark, what made them choose the path they've taken.
A lot of times I think about, you know, who are our ancestors that led us up here to this place? We stand on the shoulders of these giants. And when I am able as a member of the House of Representatives to stand on those Capitol steps and talk with students who are taking a trip to the Capitol, one thing I say to them is, for a lot of us, we'll never know if we had such an important and positive impact on our country. And we may not ever know in our lifetime. But the moral of the story to these children is, as we're getting and gearing up to 250 years of our country, is try to do what's right, even if you're not sure of how important it is today.
Our thanks to Western Illinois Congressman Eric Sorensen, Democrat from Moline. On the air, on the radio, on the web, on your mobile device, and streaming on your computer, thanks for taking some time to join us as we talk about the issues on the cities.